It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, glad you could be here as we learn about a program addressing the sexual side effects of cancer treatment on women's health. A recent review of the research suggests over 60% of women with cancer experience sexual dysfunction, but sexual health may be overlooked or deprioritized in fighting the disease. Call in with your questions, your thoughts, any point here, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Janelle Sobecki is Medical Director of the Women's Integrative Sexual Health Program and Assistant Professor of Gynecologic Oncology at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Sobecki, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. So why should women be concerned about their sexual health during and after cancer treatment?
Absolutely. Well, you know, for everyone, patients and, you know, the general population, both, sexual health is important to everyone, right? Sexual health may look different for every individual, but it's something that affects nearly everyone. And it's such an important part of a woman's quality of life. You know, we also know that cancer treatment, like you mentioned, can affect, you know, anywhere up to, you know, we think 75%, you know, in the work I do, even 100% of women who have had cancer and have gone through cancer treatment. So this is a really, really common side effect that is incredibly important to not only a woman's quality of life, but, you know, her relationship if she's in one, as well as her partner's quality of life and her partner's sexual health and life as well.
How do chemotherapy and radiation, you know, which are common cancer-fighting treatments, how might they affect sexual health?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we know for women, about two-thirds of cancers directly affect a woman's sexual organ. So these are cancers of the breast, cancers of the reproductive system, gynecologic cancers, you know, that includes cancers of the vulva, vagina, uterus, cervix, ovary. And so, you know, about two-thirds of women with cancer and their cancer treatment directly affects the sexual organ. You know, for the remainder of women with cancer, we also know that women with cancers that do not affect a sexual organ also have sexual health concerns. That can be women with, you know, colorectal or bladder cancers. I call those sexual organ adjacent. So treatments to those areas can have an impact to the sexual organs themselves. We also know women with other cancers like head and neck cancers, lung cancers, also experience sexual problems as a result of their treatment. Pretty much every cancer treatment can affect sexual health in one way or another. You know, surgery is a really obvious area where, you know, a woman has surgery to a sexual organ, that's obviously going to have side effects. Radiation therapy can certainly cause side effects, you know, to the surrounding skin, the structures. And chemotherapy, you know, I have patients who are in chemotherapy who describe a skin sensitivity, fatigue, you know, things that we don't directly think will impact sexual health, but absolutely do. Another area.
I'm going to just reintroduce you here for just a moment. Dr. Janelle Sobecki, talking about sexual health in women during and after cancer treatment. She's medical director of the Women's Integrative Sexual Health Program at UW Health. You can join in the conversation about sexual side effects of cancer, 800-642-1234. Dr. Sobecki, one other aspect here, you know, in addition to chemotherapy and radiation, are hormonal medications that are prescribed to cancer patients. What are those types of side effects in relation to sexual health?
Absolutely. So hormonal therapies typically cause a loss of estrogen. And what that loss of estrogen does for women is it can result in vaginal dryness, sometimes vaginal atrophy, which is where the tissues of the vagina change in a way that makes sexual function more painful, makes the intercourse more painful. You know, hormonal therapies can also cause other side effects, especially for women who are premenopausal. So that can include hot flashes, trouble with sleep, and all of these things together can create side effects that prohibit women from being able to enjoy a good sexual life.
How should patients, though, balance that cancer treatment, versus the risk of sexual health problems down the line? I mean, that's a really tricky conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, that's a growing area that we are exploring to try to figure out how best to do that. You know, I think in cancer treatment and surgery, we talk so much with patients about risks, right? Risks of surgery, risks of treatment, risks of chemo. And, you know, I consider sexual health and risks to sexual health and sexual problems a part of that conversation. You know, we know cancer treatments are not side effect free. In fact, the opposite, they cause quite a few side effects. But sexual health is an important one that should be part of the discussion, along with all of the other side effects that we commonly speak with patients about.
We have gynecologic oncologist Janelle Sadecki raising awareness about sexual health in women cancer survivors. You can voice your questions, share your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Researchers, they find sexual side effects of cancer treatment are discussed much less frequently with female patients than with male patients, even when the treatment directly affects sex organs. Call in with questions, your experiences fighting cancer, and sexual issues you've encountered. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Dr. Janelle Sobecki, who is Medical Director of the Women's Integrative Sexual Health Program at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Sobecki, I want to just touch down on the oncology community here for a moment, because, talking about sexual health has not been something that has been seems like a pressing concern. It's kind of been backburnered in the past. What is happening now among oncologists?
Yeah, I think, the past, I would say 5 to 10 years has really shown growth in the awareness of this issue and awareness of sexual health as an important quality of life component to female cancer care. You know, there are very talented people across the country in various centers who are really advocating for this area, generating good research evidence for how best to care for this important issue. And I think, it's gained a lot of traction. It certainly is not where we or our patients wish it was. But I think there are a lot of talented people really trying to improve this important area for women.
Let's bring on a call now, Kevin in Janesville. Hi, Kevin. What would you like to bring up?
Hi. What about the mental health aspects of a woman's sexual health post-cancer treatment, perhaps losing a breast to a mastectomy? Does this affect her mental image of who she is as a woman? So what are we doing about the mental health corner? Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin, for bringing this up. You know, I think this area is incredibly important. You know, we know sexual health is not just our bodies, right? It's bio, it's psycho, it's social, and those emotional and, psychological or relational components to sexual health are incredibly important. It is also very common for us to see women who have undergone treatments have issues related to their body image and self-image as a sexual person. We see this most commonly with women with breast cancer who may have, removal of the breasts or surgery to the breasts. And if that breast, if their breasts were a sexual organ, they now, don't have one, or they have a breast that is reconstructed. And I hear from patients that, the reconstructed breast looks good under a top, but doesn't function the same. And her partner, may have issues related to needing to avoid that breast, during sexual activity because it brings up, negative feelings regarding cancer treatment. We work closely with some of our behavioral therapists at UW and, across the state so that, issues that are pertaining to mental health and how that affects, you know, sexual health for, you know, women and their partners can be addressed alongside the other work that we do, you know, with some of the physical changes.
You also had surveyed women with colorectal cancer reporting lack of confidence or fear of incontinence during sex. What is your advice to women, cancer survivors, who feel unconfident in their body after treatment?
Yeah, I think, you know, the first is kind of a restructuring of, you know, how they feel and what they want their sexual life to look like. You know, when they're partnered, we recommend, you know, there are different activities that, you know, partners and patients can go through where they talk about areas that they do and don't want touched in a sexual encounter so that in the middle of a sexual encounter, there isn't, you know, an uncomfortable, you know, viewing or touching of an affected body part, which can be really helpful. You know, we also refer patients, you know, who need more talk therapy about that. And I think communication is key in recognizing that, you know, these women are not alone. You know, I do this work every day. And, you know, this is a community of people who we know this is so common and adjustments have to be made. But, it oftentimes it's deeper than that, right? The body and body image brings up a lot of negative feelings about cancer and fear of what the future may look like. And so, you know, like many things, it's complicated, but there's a lot of resources and a lot of ways that that can be overcome.
Your program refers some patients for pelvic floor physical therapy. What does that entail?
Yeah, absolutely. So we know that the pelvic floor, which is the, you know, sort of bowl of muscles in the pelvis, is really integral to many functions, but sexual function in particular. And so pelvic floor physical therapy can be incredibly helpful in helping women who have pain with intercourse, who have, you know, kind of in the tightness of that pelvic floor or trigger point pain of the pelvic floor. And it really works on helping that pelvic floor function normally, whether that's, you know, contracting better, relaxing better, and that can include external and internal, you know, manual manipulation. It's a very talented group of people and a really important piece of helping women with certain sexual problems.
How successful is it? How effective?
Yeah, so, you know, we have limited data, but the data that we have from patients in our own clinic who we have sent, you know, nearly all of them report that that intervention is helpful. You know, so we certainly have more to learn about how effective, but, you know, for our patients who have seen us in Wish Clinic and been referred, they do report that that was helpful.
Turning to sex therapy, in your survey of patients who participated in the Women's Integrative Sexual Health Program, few were referred to sex therapy. Why is that?
Yeah, referral to sex therapy and any of the other referrals that we do is really individualized based on, you know, the woman, if she has a partner, and the goals. And so, you know, any woman who is struggling with, you know, body image, mental health, a woman and a partner who are struggling about communication about sexual health or the changes that have happened after cancer, those are patients that we often refer. You know, so we take an integrative approach and, you know, refer patients to sex therapy when it's appropriate for the problem that they come to us with. And if we feel like that's a helpful component.
What about reproductive health and the potential after that cancer not being able to have a baby?
Yeah, absolutely. So that in particular is not my area of expertise, though many women where fertility is an issue. And so, you know, the most important part there is knowing a woman's goals, you know, discussing fertility sparing options if they are possible, depending on the type of cancer, and, you know, looping in our really talented partners at the Generations Fertility Center, you know, and taking a really multidisciplinary approach to, you know, maintaining fertility if it's possible, and having really thoughtful conversations with women about what those side effects might look like.
I wonder, Dr. Sebeki, like, this can be a sensitive subject for patients, and how do you recommend having the talk with your oncologist and not make it feel like you're downgrading the focus of the mission, which is to, you know, eradicate the cancer, and that would be the pure focus. How do you make this type of talk, you know, elevated and not make it feel like it's not important to what our mission is here, which is to cure this cancer?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, side effects are an integral component of every step of cancer care. So, that, you know, side effects are discussed, they're monitored. We, you know, support women with therapies for side effects, and sexual side effects shouldn't be any different. You know, we know from, you know, providers and patients, it's uncomfortable on both sides. I think my best advice, and hopefully this program has helped, is that these issues are so common. Nearly every woman with a cancer has had some impact to their sexual life. And so arming yourself with that confidence to say this is really important and it's happening to nearly everybody. You know, the other really important piece of knowledge is that nearly every cancer organization recognizes sexual health as an important component of cancer care. So there is a lot out there about this issue, but there's a disconnect in the office sometimes. And with anything else, I think timing is everything, right? So if you're someone who wants to discuss this, you know, use the opportunity at the beginning of the visit to say, you know, whether that's an intake form or when you're getting your vitals checked, you know, say, I have some concerns related to my sexual health that I'd really like to talk about today. That sets the visit up for time to address that well, you know, rather than, you know, kind of everything's wrapping up and we call it the doorknob question, you know, we're ready to go and, oh, wait a second, I have this question. You know, and that's hard, right? That's hard for patients getting to their next thing. It's hard for the, you know, physician or medical provider. So I think timing and recognition that, you know, this side effect is just as important as surgical side effects and chemo side effects and radiation side effects, which we talk about and treat every day in cancer care. So there's no reason we can't do the same for sexual health.
Dr. Janelle Sobecki, Medical Director of the Women's Integrative Sexual Health Program, with us, an assistant professor of gynecologic oncology at UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Still time to talk about sexual side effects and cancer, 800-642-1234. Dr. Sobecki, what sexual side effects of cancer are permanent for women?
I'd like to think none in the work that I do, but we know that unfortunately is not the case. You know, I think one of the biggest things we see is women who have either had their ovaries taken out or have had medications that cause a loss of estrogen, you know, that does permanently change the tissues of the vagina. And so we know those tissues will never be what they were when estrogen was present. And that can cause, you know, vaginal dryness, which can cause pain with intercourse. And those changes oftentimes are permanent. You know, certainly surgery, removal of sexual organs or, you know, a change to the sexual organs from, you know, radiation treatment, those things are permanent changes. Not to say that we don't have interventions to improve things, but many cancer treatments do cause permanent changes to somebody's body and sexual organs.
What needs to be further studied and examined in the sexual health of cancer patients?
I'm going to say everything. There have been so many talented people working on this. I think that, you know, we've highlighted one area, which is communication, you know, which seems like it should be simpler, right? We have done work and research that shows that women want their cancer team to bring this up. So we hear that certainly a lot. And, you know, we hear from providers, it's hard to talk about. And I think medical teams want to help. Right? That's inherent in medicine and cancer care. But I don't know that everybody feels equipped to ask, because if a patient brings up an issue, they may not be sure what to do next and how to help them best. And so I think communication and, you know, recognition of resources is really an incredibly important step, because nobody knows there's a problem if nobody's talking about it. And I think that's an area that could easily improve.
Dr. Sobecki, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Janelle Sobecki is medical director of the Women's Integrative Sexual Health Program and an assistant professor of gynecologic oncology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We have a link to the survey published in the journal Supportive Care in Cancer. You can find that link at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. On this Juneteenth, the annual commemoration of the end of slavery in the U.S. after the Civil War, we learn about a Wisconsinite making change in their community. And you can add your voice to the conversation. Call in with a question, share a comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tahira Malik is founder of Samad's House, a Milwaukee nonprofit sober living home for women in recovery from substance use. Tahira, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for inviting me today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Tahira, let's start with Juneteenth, this recognized as a federal holiday 2021, but Milwaukee celebrating Juneteenth for decades now. What does it mean for you to be in Milwaukee on Juneteenth and how it feels?
It feels absolutely amazing to be in Milwaukee on Juneteenth. Our theme this year is I Am Juneteenth. And with that being said, it commemorates so many different things dealing with independence for us. I'm just going to share with you that Samad, the meaning of Samad is independence. So it all correlates in the fact that we're trying to bring independence and self-sufficiency to the people of Milwaukee County.
Independence and self-sufficiency. Samad's House is going to be representing at the Milwaukee Juneteenth celebration later today. What are you hoping to offer people during today's celebration?
What's Samad's House? What we're offering today during Juneteenth, we are bringing awareness and education to the perils of fentanyl poisoning. We're trying to train our community on how to reverse the effects of an opioid overdose by utilizing Narcan. And then we're also training our community on how to use fentanyl testing strips so that if you are utilizing substances, you can live another day.
You have a personal story with the founding of Samad's House in 2020. Would you be willing to share how it came, its origin story, and how it came to fruition?
Absolutely. So my house came to fruition because I myself, I'm living in recovery. I've been in recovery from opioids for about a little over 11 years. I've lost my uncle. I've lost my cousin. Mm-hmm. And it took for me to lose my best friend. And I lost them all within 3 years. When I lost my best friend, that hit home so hard. And I had to go into action. I had to provide some way to bring awareness and also to bring a safe living space for women who are trying to live in recovery and for the community who are still in active addiction. I had to bring education to teach people and to bring awareness on how they can live another day.
And you take a holistic approach to this ability to live another day, to rebuilding women's lives. Can you take us inside this approach and what you mean by it?
So we take a holistic approach, meaning that you have to retrain your mind, your body, and spirit, all in conjunction and while you're trying to rebuild your life. When you live in addiction, you lose all substances of your mind, body, and spirit. The only thing that you are concerned about is consuming for another day. So when you come out of addiction and begin to live in recovery, You have to relearn how to live life. And so Samad's House offers programming, bringing financial education, health and wellness, parenting, AODA classes. And then we also, once they have completed 90 days with us, we actually offer them an opportunity to become recovery coaches and peer support specialists within our community so that we can continue to pay it forward.
Oh, that's really interesting that you really look to residents going through recovery to help others who are just starting out that journey. Why do you do that?
We do that because we're trying to empower our community with the necessary resources to be able to rebuild their life. In order to rebuild your life, you have to learn how to live life again and how to become self-sufficient. And so that once you receive the money, you have to know how to actually, you have to have education financially to be able to save the money so that you can be able to move out on your own and regain your families.
There are some treatment approaches that are medication-assisted treatment. How does your recovery home view medication-assisted treatment from opioids?
We are in total support of medically assisted treatment from opioids. We actually have a couple residents who are currently on the Suboxone program. We are in full support of anyone who's trying to live their life in recovery from illegal substances.
We're talking with Tahira Malik, who is founder of Samad's House in Milwaukee, and you can join the conversation at any point, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Tahira, what does Samad's House, why does your organization center around Black women in particular as you look at the opioid crisis?
So we particularly look at Black women, but we also look at Black men and anyone else that's living in Milwaukee County. I founded Samad's House, the residential sober living facility, because I myself am a Black woman who's living life in recovery. And I know what I went through when I was ready for change. When I was ready for change, no one could tell me where I could go to begin that change. And so we're trying to change that. What we're also trying to do is reduce the stigma of addiction. We're trying to talk to people and let them know that we don't judge you. We're just here to help. We're working really hard in our community to normalize the conversation surrounding addiction. And we do that by putting foot to the ground and bringing awareness.
Do you have to turn away women in your home in terms of the number of people you would like to help?
Yeah. Unfortunately, is that I only have two small single homes for women, and it's an abundance of women who are looking for recovery. And in the very near future, we're looking to expand into an apartment complex to be able to service more women. But we have an extensive waiting list because there are a number of women in our community who want the help. And it really hurts when we have to put them on a waiting list, because in recovery, it's an immediate need. You have to be able to help someone when they are ready, right then and there. We don't want to lose them to addiction in the streets.
And when you have a waiting list, you can't help a person right then and there when they have decided to start their journey and to live without the substances. Is that what I'm hearing?
So when we have a waiting list, I can't house them. But what we do is we provide them with necessary resources so that they can maintain their sobriety. We provide them with the outpatient treatment centers where they can go to classes daily to be able to maintain it until a bed is available. And we also work with a number of agencies that do provide housing. So we do reach out to the other housing resources just to see if there is a bed available. Unfortunately, sometimes we're not able to. Sometimes there's a shortage of beds. all around Milwaukee County. And that's why it's so important for us to really focus on providing housing for treatment for women and for men as well.
I wonder, when you say sometimes there's a shortage of beds for recovery all around Milwaukee County, do the numbers ebb and flow? Like, what would impact a rising and falling of availability of beds and other resources?
Well, unfortunately, the number is continuously rising of addiction in our communities. And it's a number of reasons that provide people to seek out treatment. Maybe they lost a loved one. A lot of times it's like, I'm just ready. And the shortage of beds is kind of it's a distraction for them not to be able to receive that housing. But we do try to provide them with the resources to maintain their sobriety. Sometimes, I can't say why. I don't know why the numbers ebb and flow, but they do. And sometimes when everyone is ready, there's not a bed available. And that's why it's important to be able to provide more housing here in Milwaukee County so that we can actually service more people.
Tahira, over 20 years ago, you faced really big difficulties in your life, specifically around prescription pain pills. What happened to your life with prescription pain pills?
Well, with prescription pain pills, I graduated from college and I worked as a social worker for a number of years. Mm. I had an accident and someone rear-ended my car, and the doctor prescribed me prescription Percocet pills, and I ended up taking them, and I liked the effect of the effect they had on my body, because I was trying to run away from an abusive relationship, and that helped, right? I became so addicted to the prescription pain pills that's the only thing that really mattered in my life. I ended up losing my house, my job. I was blessed not to lose my children because I have such amazing and incredible parents. And it took a lot for me to rebuild my life. And that's why I'm really working hard in the community with the support of my agency to be able to provide housing and to be able to provide hope for the Milwaukee community.
Tahira Malik, founder of Samad's House in Milwaukee, focused on helping women recover from substance use disorders. And you can join in and be part of the conversation at any point. Call with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we acknowledge the history and significance of Juneteenth, when enslaved African Americans in Texas were told they were free, a century and a half later, we learn about work underway to make healthier and more inclusive communities. Tahira Malik, founder of the Milwaukee nonprofit Samad's House, is with us. And you can join in with a question. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Tahira, a study published this year in the Harm Reduction Journal suggests that opioid overdose death among Black Americans is driven by unmet needs for safety, security, stability, and survival. When you hear that, how does it align with what you encounter at Samad's House?
So, Kate, it aligns in the fact that Milwaukee is one of the most segregated cities in the United States. It aligns in the fact that with it being segregation, we are one of the cities that has one of the worst housing problems here. It aligns in that it is one of the cities that is most impoverished. It aligns in so many ways because there's a lack of resources. There's a lack of job security. There's a lack of housing security. There's a lack of income security. So, yes, it aligns in effect all of those ways.
Specifically on the housing piece there and creating more availability for sober living and recovery homes, what would need to happen in order for you to scale up? What would be the next step in terms of funding?
We have to have governmental officials providing more availability for income for housing. We have to be able to house individuals who are looking, who are homeless, who are transient, who is looking for a change in their lives. We have to be able to have funding supporting the sober living community.
Have you been able to get any grant funding in order to make Samad's house more resilient, or have there been grant resources?
We've received some grants in regards to providing us to become a harm reduction agency, to be able to educate and bring awareness in our communities. We have received monies in regards to Milwaukee County Bridge Housing to be able to house women. When you house individuals, though, you know, there are so many needs that has to be met, such as food, such as providing.
That's okay. It's that holistic. Well, I think it goes back to what you said before about the holistic approach, that it is not just substance use. It is rebuilding the entire life. Is that fair?
That is fair. It is rebuilding the entire life of a person who have been lost in addiction. We have to be able to bring awareness. But when we were building a life, we have to have substance programming to be able to rebuild that life. We have to be able to have the different classes and the resources, because it goes so much. If we are rebuilding our life, right? So, Kate, this is fair to say, when someone is ready for that change in their life, and they go to the detox center for 7 to 10 days, then they're housed in residential, provided that there's an open bed. And I'm just going to say, provided that there's an open bed, because there are few residential facilities here in Milwaukee County that house women who are trying to find recovery, right? We have only a few of those resources, but say you're able to find a bed to be able to continue within your tract of sobriety. So once you're there in an open bed, you're there from 30 to 90 days, right? Mm. Now we're able to move you into sober living, because now you're invested in your recovery. So sober living is the next step for you to be independent. So if you're in residential 30 to 60 days, and then we have to provide sober living, right? There's very few sober living homes in Milwaukee County to provide, to be able to assist in that treatment. So we need more beds and more sober living facilities. But Kate, in effect that we have, and we have the sober living, and you're able to get into a sober living house for women, what are your next steps? We have to be able to provide permanent housing for women. That's the next step. We have to be able to say, okay, you have invested 6 months in your recovery. So now here is the end result. You have to be able to provide that peace. It is what I am seeing is that it's hard to invest in your recovery when you have a time clock on your head. We have to be able to extend that clock so you do not have to be afraid to take those next steps. Recovery takes a lot of time.
And it's different for each person.
Yes, it's different for each person. Absolutely. Absolutely is different for each person. It depends on the track that you take for your life. Okay. But if you are invested in your life, you have to be able to, or you're ready for those next steps, you have to be able to have a solid plan. We as an organization provide a solid plan with the help of our residents. We create those safety plans together, and we have outcomes, milestones, 10, 20, 30 days that we are achieving to rebuild that life.
Tahira Malik with us, founder of Samad's House in Milwaukee, a sober living home community for women in recovery from substance use. And you can join in along the way at 800-642-1234. Tahira, what happens if a woman relapses along their journey? How does Samad's House respond?
So when a woman relapses, and if a woman relapses along their journey, if they're ready to take that next step and go back to detox, we're more than willing to take them. We stay in connection with all of our residents. And in fact, I can tell you, I have a resident, and she had lost contact with her mother. Well, not even lost contact. Her mother wasn't around due to addiction. And then she fell into addiction. She came to Samad's House after her residential stay of 90 days. She stayed with me for 120 days. And when she went to her next step for her apartment, over a course of, I'm going to say 70 days, she relapsed. And when she relapsed, the one thing that I am so proud of, because we kept that connection, we have a mentoring program. So our alum stay in contact with our newer residents. Mm. But when in fact she relapsed, she called me. She called me and she cried. She said, I relapsed. I said, well, what do you need to do now? She said, I'll call you when I'm ready. And she did. When she was ready to re-begin that process, she called. And every step of the way, we have been there with her. We have been there with her. And we are working with her and working with the legal action of Wisconsin for her to regain custodial rights of her children that she lost during addiction.
Thank you for sharing that story. And in our final moments left, how can other organizations follow your lead and take action in their own communities?
Other organizations have to be aware of the growing need of educating their community on Narcan training and on fentanyl testing strips. We all can be proactive. We all can go out and save a life. All you have to do is be willing to take those steps.
Tahira, do you ever get tired, or do you feel... do you still feel hope?
You know, I always feel hope. Every time I look at the number, the growing number of people in Milwaukee County, we have lost a number of people in April, May. You know, these are skyrocketed numbers all over our community. So no, I don't have time to get tired. We have to go out and we have to save lives. Mm. We have to.
Tahira, thank you for joining us and for sharing the story of Samad's House.
Thank you, Kate, for inviting us. Thank you for inviting us. And we invite the community to come out, celebrate Juneteenth, our day of independence and celebration with us. We also invite the community to be put boots to the ground. Please,
Tahira,
join us and bring an education. Thank you.
Tahira Malik, founder of Samad's House. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.